In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
From the student who might want to be a teacher to the superintendents leading districts across South Dakota, from SDPB, today is Tuesday, August 5th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we head to Wall and Platte Geddes to check in with school superintendents getting ready for the sounds of squeaking sneakers in the freshly buffed hallways. We'll talk about everything from the custodians who clean the very bottoms of the lunchroom table legs to the visionary leadership of rural South Dakotans. Then maybe back to school has you feeling all the positive energy learning can bring. We've got your guide to becoming a teacher in South Dakota, and it might even help you appreciate the teachers in your hometown. Teacher Talk is later in the hour. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're In the Moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Administrators, teachers, and support staff are getting ready to head back into the school building. We check in with rural superintendents from across the state ahead of the school year. Joining me on Zoom, we have Platte Geddes School District Superintendent Joel Bailey and Wall School District Superintendent Sally Krauser. What's happening, like, with support staff? I'm thinking of custodians and, you know, people who are getting, and bus drivers getting routes, and what's some of the unseen work by the unsung heroes of the school district? We'll start with you, Dr. Bailey.
Well, actually, we just wrapped up four interviews for two paraprofessional positions this morning. So at this point, we are full staffed, with the exception of maybe a middle school basketball coach. So not always the case, so I feel very fortunate about that. We're able to hire two phenomenal custodians last year that do not miss a beat, work very well together. Our kitchen staff is returning after with 3 or 4 years of experience. So we're very fortunate, and I know not every district is so lucky, and it wasn't too long ago we were in those shoes, but the unsung heroes, as you referred to them, is what they are, and you got to try and make sure you remind them of that each and every day, because without them, our school would not function.
Yeah. Dr. Krauser, what is the work of, say, a custodial staff or some of those paraprofessionals in getting ready for the first day?
Well, this is kind of timely. I just took my summer staff out to lunch a couple days ago, thanking them for the work they'd done. And it was my director of buildings and grounds and my custodians, my secretaries, the office staff who were here. And then after lunch, my leadership team, we kind of had a retreat and kind of a meeting. And I said, I want you to report out a little bit what each of our departments have done kind of over the summer or are in the middle of doing. And I had to kind of smile because of all of our academia that we have. I think my director of buildings and grounds had the longest report. And he said, perhaps I didn't quite do this the way you wanted it. And I said, and I was thinking to myself, it just goes to show all the work that you guys have been doing over the summer, which we all know happens, but it is so often, you know, cleaning the legs of the cafeteria tables, those kinds of things go unnoticed by the folks who are more concerned about whether or not we have the right looking sports uniforms and such. And so I think it is really good to praise those folks who've been going all summer long.
Yeah. Yeah. And their job is about to change drastically from the pacing. I'm not sure. I guess if someone was here, I would say, which do you prefer when you have the whole building and all the projects, or do you prefer? And I bet most of them would prefer when the students came back and it's a lived in space. But yeah, good work for them. What are some of the opportunities? And everyone comes in to their district with a leadership message often. And is there a theme this year that you're kind of looking to? And we'll start with you, Dr. Krauser, where, you know, you gather everybody together and say, this is the year of this, or this is the goals we're setting this year, or is there something you're focused on this year from a leadership perspective as a leader?
Yeah. If anybody knows me, they know my mind goes faster and in more circles than I can wrap myself around. And so my staff tries to keep up with me. There are just so many good things going on. I am so excited to be a part of the world I get to be a part of. And it's August 1st tomorrow. And what August always does for me is it makes me start missing my staff and my kids. And a couple things that come to mind when you ask that. Our board and our admin staff, last year in the winter, we did a retreat and we worked on some goals. And I have a young board, but they are just young members of a young board, inexperience wise, maybe I should say. And we wanted to put together some goals that I could aspire toward. And so they knew what direction. And so those three I did kick out to my leadership group. And I will also share with my staff here when we come back together. And those goals aren't that inspirational. But one thing we are really going to work on is developing just a strong financial plan that's district-wide, more for a district goal. With that too, I want to do some strategic planning and some pieces of a strategic plan, which would include capital outlay plan, curriculum planning, some of those types of plans that really haven't been solidified lately. Another goal that the district that we're going to do work on is really making sure we know our expectations, staff, students, families. I think in order to have just a strong organization of any kind, you need to know your role. When I was playing sports, I needed to know my role. And as long as you're doing your role, the machine is going to work. And so often we all go at things and we get in each other's way because we don't know the role. So knowing our roles and expectation, and me as a leader, it's my job to share those. We just came off of a superintendent conference, and I'm pretty sure it was Mr. Nebelsek, who was a retired superintendent from Huron. But he said, public school is the one place and maybe the only place where we really have an opportunity to show agape love. And if you know what agape love is, it is the love of Jesus Christ. We love everybody. We don't turn anyone away. We treat everyone, not the same, but I mean, we take care of everyone. And public school, that gives me the opportunity to do that. And I'm really excited to share that with my staff because I had never thought of it that way. And I have been asked to put together private schools. I've been asked to do a lot of things, and I never really truly felt the calling. And I've realized why. This is my role, and this is our role as kids start coming in. And that's the excitement that I guess I want to share with my teachers. I'll come back around to that other goal I've got after a little bit when I think about it.
That's a beautiful thing to meditate on, though, that notion of public school and agape love and the connection between that. Thank you. I'm glad that that came up for you at that moment. That feels like a gift. Joel, do you come in with any leadership messages or goals this year for your staff?
That is something that's how I kick off my back to school welcome back presentation every year with a theme. Last year it was cover and move. We've had growth mindset, we've had atomic habits, and focusing on some of those more popular leadership books that I'm able to glean information from and share with our staff. And this year it's a little more simplistic, but it's just hashtag growth, because that's what we want to see from the superintendent all the way down to our youngest, kindergarten student, is growth. And oftentimes, and what you read about in the newspaper or here on the news is state test scores. And well, being a public educator for my entire life, I know that learning and growth looks different for every student and every teacher and me. And we need to make sure that we are recognizing and being intent about focusing on that growth. Threes and fours on the state assessment, that's great. But guess what? Some students are starting at a one, and they may make more growth than those kids who got threes and fours, and we have to celebrate that. And as a school leader and as teachers, we need to model growth for our learners. And that's really what I want to focus on. And if we're not growing, we're going the wrong way. And so again, very simplistic, but also a very important message. And not only for our students and admin, but a great lesson in life, whether you're joining the workforce, you're going to college, you have to continue to grow spiritually, educationally, personally. And I just don't know if there's a better lesson we can instill in all of our entire group of stakeholders, our community. Yeah. So that's really where we're going to go this year.
Are there ways that you reflect on your own growth? Do you write it down? Do you check it off? No one's giving you a grade that I'm aware of. And so are there ways that you self-assess your own growth throughout the year? What are your benchmarks?
Yeah, well, for one, it's how many letters to the editor in the newspaper, how many public participants are at our school board meetings. And I say that a bit tongue in cheek, but we do have some very large critics that are very quick to point out my shortcomings. And it's really just being mindful. I write down my goals. I don't necessarily share them with anybody. But then it's really just taking a step back when you have a second to see where you need work. And we do get feedback from our school board. Typically they do our evaluations and which are very important for growth. And looking at, it's important to have another set of eyes and assisting you in your growth. And I'm fortunate to have a very great school board, very supportive of the things that are happening here, but also like we tend to get blinders on sometimes. And so you have to maintain a level of open-mindedness, even when you're talking with stakeholders and parents, because, their perception is their reality. So how they're perceiving things, maybe I need to be better at communicating that more clearly, or building that level of understanding why decisions were made. So really just, stepping back and just maybe doing a little self-assessment occasionally on where we started, where we're at a midpoint, and where we're finishing the year. Mm-hmm. Is this really what I try and do? And then also just to take that feedback. They say, there's no such thing as bad feedback. And I think we have to be mindful of that perception is reality. And from that feedback, really focus on how we operate differently or maybe build on some of our strengths.
Right. Yeah, I like that. There's more to this conversation after a short break. You're in the moment on listener supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We return now to our conversation, checking in with superintendents across the state. We have Joel Bailey from Platte Geddes School District and Sally Krauser, superintendent of the Wall School District. I'm wondering if there are new state laws or federal regulations or federal laws that are impacting particularly rural school districts. Does anything come to mind for you?
Go ahead, Dr. Krauser.
Well, I don't know anything that is earth shattering. I'm a superintendent. I'm also a middle school, high school principal. I get to go in so hard on the day-to-day things that I don't allow changes in the laws to get in the way of good work. And so is anything earth-shattering? No. I'm going to be honest. There is one that I think that is a law that I know a lot of us would love to change, and I've got justification of why. And it's not that we don't want to work, but right now the state requires student learning objective and SLO for our teachers, and it's part of the accreditation evaluation system. Well, what that is where a teacher, and back in my day when I was doing a lot of training, I trained teachers on it. But it's finding a standard, and then they have to assess, and they have to teach toward it, and then they assess again, and there's a lot of paperwork to fill out. It has become a checkoff system. And I say that in my school, I'm going to speak for myself. I'm not speaking for the state teachers, but it has become a process to work through. We're already doing the work. I've got lots of documentation where my teachers and my kids are already doing all this work. So having this little extra thing, it's like, oh my goodness, it's just another extra piece of documentation. And I don't know, I'm going to be honest, I don't know the value of it when those things are already being done. Okay, I know that's kind of a tiny piece. I do know, I'm going to say, funding-wise, I think some of our rural schools, one of our superintendents, and there's probably a number of them, so I'm not going to name names, but did a lot of work to get a little more funding for our sparsity schools. Small schools in such rural areas. And so we appreciate the work. We've got some really good superintendents that do a huge amount of work during the legislative session. And I want to just say thank you, thank you, thank you to them. I'm not one of them. I try to go and support where I can, but there are some who do a lot of work. I don't really like the word lobbying, but they go supporting our schools at the legislature. And they work with some of our superintendent leadership. And so I appreciate all the work they do. Mr. Bailey may know things that affect us. I know there is a little bit of funding for student teachers now, if you need to hire a student teacher to be a teacher. I'm kind of like Joel, I am fully staffed. I'm excited. My staff is excited. I only had to hire one teacher, I think, this year. So we're not going to have to use student teachers, but I like that option.
Joel, did you want to add to that?
You know, from the state level and any major changes in laws, I don't foresee having a large impact this year. There is some changes that will come if a school district is trying to issue capital outlay certificates or pass an opt-out, some changes in dates that will make things maybe a little bit more difficult from a school perspective. But I also kind of understand the logic behind having those votes on the same day as you know, in November or something when there's an election for better turnout. So I get the logic behind it, but again, it's not what I would consider advantageous for us, for school districts who have to go this route. Obviously, we've just received word last Friday that the federal government is now releasing our Title II funds and some of those, which was a large concern, especially when Congress had already appropriated those funds and we never really got a really good explanation of what the holdup was or why. It was just they were under continual review. Those are programs that Title III funding, which is for, you know, our English as a second language students. For us, we have two Hutterite Colony schools, which is about 70 students. All of those students enter as English learners. So you get a little extra money to help lead those programs, or whether it's a ESL teacher or a curriculum or something that can help go offset the cost of those. I'm not optimistic that we will see Title III funding. It also has to do with McKinney-Vento, homeless students, migrant students. So we don't see a lot of migrant students in our area, but I know that's going to have a profound impact on specific districts across South Dakota. The EL funding for us will have a minimal impact. The title funds that just got released, we were looking at, you know, roughly $50,000. When you take $50,000 out of a general fund budget, that's a big deal in a school our size, or, you know, and that was, we used that money to reduce the size, class size reduction grant is what we call it. So we have two kindergarten teachers versus one. So we're able to offer two sections and two teachers versus one. The other one is our high school counselor, who is so much more than a high school counselor. She's a career counselor. She's a mental health advocate and professional. She's working with students on dual credit and enrollment, ensuring they have all their high school credits, working with parents on completing the FAFSA, which continues to get harder and change. So that money is extremely important to us, and it goes and it is spent very wisely on very worthwhile roles within our district. So fortunately, we've dodged that bullet for this year. But I hate to be cynical, but I've been in this job long enough to know that I just don't foresee this trend stopping. Looking back at Project 2025, and if you see what's happening at the federal level and getting rid of diversity, equity, inclusion programs and closing down the US DOE and bringing that all back to the state, and looking at creating programs for school voucher systems or tax credits, all of those things will have a profound impact on public schools in South Dakota. And I just feel like the makeup of our legislators in DC and in Pierre are all leaning, not all of them, but a majority now are leaning farther to the right, and who are in very large support of these movements that we're seeing at the national level. And all of those are detriments to public schools. So I'm quite fearful. But we just have to continue to fight the good fight, work along our legislators. We have some great lobbyists in the state who work on our behalf. But again, there was a bill dropped that basically lobbyists shouldn't be able to be paid with school district funds, and it should be the educators out there lobbying. Well, our number one priority is to run our school districts and our communities and educate our students. And we need to, and we rely on these lobbyists to work on our behalf. So yeah, it's a little scary and the future, but again, we just have to stay focused on our task at hand. And ultimately it's creating our, you know, developing real world problem solvers, prepare them for whether it's college or career readiness. And, you know what? We are a resilient bunch as public educators, and we are going to continue to roll with the punches and do our best for the kids that walk through our doors each and every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Yeah. We're experiencing a little bit of that uncertainty ourselves here.
Absolutely.
On public broadcasting. So I'm thinking now, will I be able to talk to you next year before the school starts? Will we have a show? Will we be here to connect people at different districts across the state? So I guess
sidebar, not to interrupt, but I had the privilege of serving on the National Early Learning Rural Cohort. And my very first meeting, which it was through our National Superintendents Organization, AASA, I got to go to Detroit Public Broadcasting, and I got to tour the facilities and talk to the people there. And I promise you, from a public educator perspective, a parent of two, you have my full support, SDPB and public broadcasting. Because I see the value in everything that you guys do. And please know you are appreciated.
Thank you. Before we let you get back to your day, any final thoughts about some quirky thing that you're looking forward to coming back, something that makes your school unique, Dr. Krauser?
Quirky thing. I live in the quirk. I don't know. I'm starting a blog.
Are you?
And we're starting a new website. And I've been wanting to do this, but I just have to make a commitment. I feel so many times the things that come at us in a negative way are because of people just not understanding. And so my whole goal is to keep up a blog, to make a video, to go with the blog on our website, to educate folks. And yes, it may be about things that we just take for granted that everybody understands. But then as these questions come to me, I'm thinking, okay, they obviously don't understand it at the level that would really help them, because we are such a word of mouth environment that, you know what, if I can get somebody to truly understand what I'm trying to do and spread that, it's amazing the support you get. So my new, I just figured this out today. My new blog is going to be called Krauser, Coffee, Kids, and Chaos. And that goes right up my alley. So that's something I'm doing. I'm excited. We finished our new CTE edition. We've got a couple of good teachers, one that came from industry. And so being the mother of a new graduate from here, my son is making some pieces of equipment that my husband actually uses in his contracting business. And it's been fun because he made the piece of equipment in shop class with these tools here and equipment that we wouldn't have been able to. And we were able to get some of that with a Perkins grant, federal grant, some funding, Perkins funding. We've got a good teacher who can find good deals and has good partnerships. That's kind of a fun piece that I'm looking forward to. We've got a team that we're hoping will get past the, we were so close last year. We're planning to show up at the Dome for football. That's coming up this fall.
Right.
And not to get ahead of ourselves, but you got to believe in order to get there. And another, I think the last thing I'm going to mention is, a couple things. I have a couple teacher leaders I sent to Dakota Dreams. That's a state leadership for teachers program. And they came back with some great ideas. And my entire staff, you'd mentioned earlier, you know, some of those folks, my entire staff, my cooks, my custodians, and everybody, we're doing a book study, The Energy Bus by John Gordon. You know, it's a good reminder for some of us that have been in education for a long time, and sometimes we lose the excitement for what we do. It's also good for my young staff, and I have a lot of young staff, to get your mind right and keep it right. And the last thing I'm going to say is I really would like to find somebody who could make a Fitbit for the mind, or not a Fitbit. Yeah. To track the miles my mind goes on any given day. Because that would be a great research project. But anyway, life is grand, and I'm excited for what this year is going to bring.
I love that. Joel, any?
At Platt Geddes, you know, we'll make a really strong emphasis specifically in our elementary school. The science of reading is something maybe you've heard about the last couple of years. all of our teachers are now trained in that. So that's exciting, working with a company, the 95% group, focusing back on phonics. So I'm really excited about that. I think the teachers are. I can't wait to see the positive impact that has. We'll continue with our cell phone ban, which we're going into year 3.5, I guess you will, using phone cases. You know, that goes as well as we're willing to implement it and make sure that it's done right. The beauty of that program is every new group of kids that come into the middle school, high school building, they've never experienced life in school with the cell phone. So it's something that's just the norm for them. So as we continue to use those procedures, the kids just become more accepting of it. Most of them, you know, kids are kids. So there's a few that will certainly try to circumvent our procedures, but positive. It's been positive. We were fortunate to have First Lady Roden and Dr. Graves here in the spring to see how we've rolled that out and how we implemented and the positive impact it had on kids. And so, those are just a few things. And otherwise, it's just that focus on growth and how do we help each individual student and teacher and the superintendent achieve their full potential.
Yeah. What? How would you define the outcome of that? The positive impact of a cell phone ban a few years in. What are you seeing that you think is a tangible? Like, yeah, this is working. Because I'm a little unclear about whether they work and how we're measuring that, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
You know, so the our data is anecdotal for the most part. We've never tracked it down to, we've never got that granular. But when I have a senior student who would have an open period say, Mr. Bailey, I read a book during study hall. I never would have done that had I had my phone. To me, that's a positive impact. And it's really just, if you've read the book, The Anxious Generation, and they talk about attention fragmentation and how every single thing that comes from this is attention grabbing and the impact it has on sustained attention and the need for continual stimulation. If we can just give kids a break from that during this school day, because we know as soon as they get home or out of practices, that's typically the first thing they pick up. So they might not know it, but I feel like we're doing them a tremendous favor in helping remove this distraction for 6 hours a day, allowing them to really focus on learning and not only that, but being able to communicate with one another without that rectangled shaped thing in your hand and seeing one another and having those conversations, because those are skills that aren't going to go away, at least in my opinion. Maybe AI and stuff has some different things to say about that, but that's the skills in what I want our kids to leave here with, the ability to be able to focus on a task and complete the task and do it well. And it starts really by maintaining that engagement and tension in the classroom. And by removing that potential distraction, I think we are just ultimately setting them up for success. Our teachers know, I mean, not every kid's going to be engaged. That's just nearly impossible. But but let's remove that barrier. Let's continue to focus on that. Let's make sure that we are giving these kids the best opportunity to learn and give our teachers attentive students who can communicate and respond in conversation, in writing, not reliant on anything but what they've learned and their own thoughts. I think that will serve them all very well in the future.
That's Joel Bailey and Sally Krauser, superintendents from Platt Geddes and Wall. After the break, our Teacher Talk educators outline the path to becoming a teacher. That's next on In the Moment on SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Some people know from a young age that education is their chosen career. Others take a little longer to find their way into the profession. Our Teacher Talk educators describe their guide to becoming a teacher. Gina Benz is a high school teacher at Roosevelt in Sioux Falls. She's also an adjunct professor at Augustana University, the University of Sioux Falls, and the University of South Dakota. She's been teaching for more than 25 years. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member and director of the Center of Student and Professional Services at the University of South Dakota's School of Education. Here's our conversation.
Part of my job is that I recruit people to become teachers, and then I help them become teachers and find their path. And there's not one linear route to becoming a teacher. There are many ways. And I think that's because the field of education thinks that there should be many ways to attaining the knowledge that you're seeking. And so there are a lot of options for folks who are interested in becoming a teacher. And so I just wanted to lay them all out there kind of neatly in a guide for us to talk about today.
All right. You can find everything on the blog at sdpb.org/teacher talk. But let's begin with teachers need at least a bachelor's degree. You mm-hmm. got to go to college.
You do. Yep. It is a requirement that you are trained in the field of education. And that is because we will teach you things that you will need to know in order to do the job. And I feel like that goes without saying. And also, I feel like it bears repeating that the educators that your children work with every day have a bachelor's degree. And they have been trained in this field to know best practices for how to help young people develop and grow.
Yeah. All right. But you can have more than one kind of bachelor's degree.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about what some of the options are.
Yeah. This is something I really talk to people who are in their junior, senior year about, who are thinking about going.
Of high school.
Of high school. Yes. Who are thinking about going to college. Is that if you want to become a teacher, the next question you should ask yourself is, what kind of teacher do I want to become? Because there are different degrees for the different types of teacher. So an elementary education teacher has a different bachelor's degree than a special education teacher, and a different degree than a high school English teacher, and a different degree than a PE teacher. So you do need to start thinking about pretty early on, what kind of teacher do I want to be, so that you get the right bachelor's degree for the type of teacher you want to become. And that if you decide, which you can definitely do in that freshman, sophomore year of college, oh, I do still want to be a teacher, but I no longer want to be an elementary education teacher. I want to be a special education teacher, that you have the ability to change your major. Okay. So thinking about that and in selecting your university.
Now, we know that you're with the University of South Dakota.
Yes.
But when you can, there's more than one place to study education in South Dakota. What are some of the questions that you would ask mm-hmm. if you were a family touring? Like, I want to become a teacher. Is this the college for me?
I would ask what majors they offer inside of education. Okay. So what we were just discussing there, asking, can I become an elementary education teacher at this university? Can I become a special education teacher at this university? The answer to that, I can just a humble plug can say yes at the University of South Dakota. The answer to that question is yes. You can become any kind of teacher there. But I always just encourage folks to ask that question at whatever institution they're exploring.
Gina, what else would you add to the what question should you ask at on a college tour if you or your high school senior or junior wants to go into education? What questions would you advise parents ask?
I'm thinking about the student teaching experience mm-hmm. and what that looks like. For my own daughter, her student teaching this year will take place in two different schools, but during one semester. So she'll be at a small town school and then a larger school. At USD, it's quite different, mm-hmm. right, Jackie?
Yeah, it is. We do a year-long teacher residency. We've been doing that since 2010, and that came from both the research side of things, feedback from our K-12 partners, feedback from our students, that they just wanted more time in the classroom. And mm-hmm. so we've been going with that model now, like I said, since 2010.
So ask questions about the in-classroom experiences mm-hmm. and pathway, yeah.
And I have a question for Jackie. What if I'm a 35-year-old and I want to go back to school for teaching? Then do I student teach for a whole year? Does that look different? What if I already have a bachelor's degree?
We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's next.
Wrote about
that's
all
next
of it.
About
Sorry.
Going back. Going back. Let's deal with the freshman experience first, though.
Sure.
How do you know if you want to be elementary or secondary?
You might not know right away, okay. and that yeah. is absolutely okay. I think.
But secondary, you have to concentrate on something.
Yes.
So if you're going to be a secondary school teacher and you're a college freshman mm-hmm. and you're 19 years old, you also need to be paying attention to getting that education in physics, English or what have you.
You're exactly right. So secondary teachers are certified to teach the state of South Dakota, 5th grade through 12th grade, and then they have a concentration in a subject area. So if you think about your traditional high school day, you might have a a history class, an English class, a biology class. Those are all the specific majors that secondary education teachers have. And so, yes, you are absolutely correct. You may not know your freshman year what kind of teacher you want to be, but having that on your radar of, do I like science? I'm going to be taking a lot of science classes if I decide to become a science teacher. Do I like English? I will take a lot of English classes. Or do I want to work with kids and learn the subjects kind of broadly? That's going to be more elementary.
What if I want to coach?
Oh, that's an endorsement we offer as well. You can minor in coaching. And then we also...
I'm a high school football player who's like, I want to be a teacher, and a but coach. I know I want to be coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of different paths you could take. Any of the teachers that we just talked about, you can be an elementary school teacher and still coach football at the high school level. You just leave your elementary building and go over to the high school and coach.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about if I want to be a school librarian?
Ooh, great question. that is an option as well. A lot of folks will get kind of a dual, they'll double up. So they might be a high school history or English teacher and get their school librarian endorsement on top of it.
So those are the endorsements.
Yep.
All right. Mm-hmm. What did you, Gina, start? Did you go in as a high school?
I majored in English and in secondary education, so I could teach middle school or high school.
From the get-go.
From the get-go. Mm-hmm. And I also had a reading minor just to support that.
Nice.
And then I eventually went back for an EL endorsement, which is English Learner's Endorsement, so I could teach immigrant refugee students. And my daughter's doing the same right now. She's getting her coaching endorsement and her EL endorsement.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Jackie, when you were a freshman in college, did you want to be a teacher? Is that what you went to college for?
No, I have a bachelor's of arts in English and then a minor in political science. And then my teacher origin story is directly tied to Gina. I will tell this story as many times as people will listen to
it.
It's
a good story.
I had just finished or was just about to finish my degree at University of South Dakota in English, and I saw you at a basketball game. Is that right? A sporting
event.
This
part I do not remember.
Okay. So my dad, I think, was still coaching high school basketball.
Yes.
And so I was at a Roosevelt High School basketball game, and Gina was there, and we were visiting about what I was going to do when I was done. And she just said, well, you know, I'm going to be going on parental leave in the fall. If you wanted to be my long-term sub, think about it.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And so I very quickly looked into what I would need to do to become a substitute teacher so I could fill in for Gina while she was out on parental leave.
And was your dad's classroom right next to mine at that time?
It was, yeah.
You were right next door to your dad.
Yeah, I was.
Which brings us to Gina's question, which is you can go back to school to become a teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're 35 or older and you're thinking, or if, you know, whatever, if you have a different bachelor's degree, you can go back to school to become a teacher. What's the pathway there, Jackie?
So this is the route I took. I did not know the same way Gina did right away that this is what I wanted to do. And it was because I had the experience in your classroom that I was sent on this path. It would have been very beneficial to me to have already been a teacher when I was in Gina's classroom. Wow. She did a lot of supporting.
But you did really well. You were a natural.
I appreciate you saying that. But I learned so much when I went through the path that I took, which was then I went back to school. I got my master's degree in teaching and learning. It can be called secondary education. It looks different at different universities. And then you also get your teaching license during that time. So that was what I did. I have a master's degree and an endorsement, or I got my, at the time, Illinois teaching certificate in secondary English.
Okay.
So I'm currently teaching a graduate course for students who are getting their master's to get their teacher certification. So these students are mostly in their upper 20s and just found out, you know what, teaching sounds good.
Yeah.
So you get a Master of Arts in Elementary Education with a certification, or an MA in Secondary Education, or an MA in Multi-Categorical Special Education.
Yep. Those are all three that we offer at the University of South Dakota. They are available at other institutions, obviously, as well. They're really popular right now. We have folks who are coming into these programs who are, I think, for a variety of different reasons. There's folks like me who have that bachelor's degree and had some kind of experience working in a school, working in education adjacent fields, and felt called to come back. And then there's folks who have really well-established careers who have just decided, you know what, I'm ready for a change and have looked into these opportunities. So it's quite popular.
And that secondary education, again, that can be the person who's a, you know, was a journalism major, worked in the journalism field, and then said, I want to go back.
Yep.
So someone like me, if I wanted to become a teacher of journalism, I'm not saying their jobs hiring, but if that's what I wanted to do, then that's what I could go back and get an MA in secondary education. And then what would I be learning?
You would be learning all of the best practices for how to become a teacher. So you're going to learn about technology in the classroom. You are going to learn about classroom management. You are going to learn about lesson planning. You will learn about adolescent and childhood development. All of these things that go into how do students learn, grow, how do you manage a classroom.
Teaching.
And I would add you'll learn how to do assessment in an ethical and reliable way. You'll learn how to analyze the results of those assessments, a lot of data analysis.
Okay. And then you get certifications in different areas?
Yes. Okay. So the elementary education certification, there's actually a long list of the endorsements that you get with the South Dakota Department of Education. But broadly, it certifies you to teach kindergarten through eighth grade.
Okay.
And then secondary would be fifth grade through 12th grade in your content area. And then special education is kindergarten through 12th grade.
Okay. I think more people are coming because they've been listening to Teacher Talk.
Oh, let's say that.
That's I hope so.
Let's say that.
I've decided to go back to school because of Teacher Talk. All right. Teachers must obtain and maintain a teaching license. Tell us about that, Jackie.
Yes. Well, I feel like I want to defer to Gina. You're in the field right now doing this. I still have my teaching license, but... I don't plan on giving it up. I'm really proud of it. So I'm planning to maintain it for as long as I can. But I feel like you talk with folks more often and are more aware of the different ways that people can maintain their teaching license.
For sure. Every 5 years, we have to accumulate 6 college credits or something equivalent to that. And a lot of school districts will offer options for teachers to accumulate those credits or those hours they need to renew their license every 5 years. And the colleges also offer so many different options, online options, in-person options, weekend options, and I've really enjoyed the online options myself.
I'm glad
to hear
that.
Praxis exam in order to become certified?
Oh, great question. So the Praxis exam, this is something I also talk about with incoming students, both at the master's degree level and at the undergraduate degree level. It is required in every state where you would like to be a teacher. So you will take a test. You'll take 2 tests, actually. One is called the Praxis Content Exam, and that's going to measure your abilities to know the content that you will be teaching. So there's one for elementary teachers. Do you know the math that you need to know to teach elementary math, right? And social studies and English. So all of those skills are in that elementary content exam. Same thing for special education, same thing for secondary, and it'll be specific to your major. So you would be tested on your knowledge about biology, for instance.
Okay.
We require our students to take those while they're in their degree program before they go out into the field to student teach.
That seems like a very good idea.
Well, I'm certified.
I'm scrolling through my my ability to do fifth grade math, and I'm coming up with, don't go straight to that test. You're going to need to brush up.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's one thing I also talk with folks about is these tests are not easy, you know? I think that there's this assumption of like, well, I went to elementary school, so I would pass this test. It's different. It's different to know fifth grade math as a fifth grader than it is to know it as an adult who has to teach it to a fifth grader. That's a different knowledge base.
People do fail the Praxis.
Oh, yeah. It takes people more than one time.
Yes.
Yeah, it will. So that is common. And then I like people to know that not only do these folks have a degree, but they also took tests that demonstrated that they have this skill set.
Yeah.
So they take that one before they go in to do their student teaching or teacher residency, as we call it at USD. And then you take another one called the Praxis PLT. And that one is more about teaching writ large.
Okay.
What do you do in classroom management situations? How do you handle an emergency? What does lesson planning look like? Mm. And that one you take before you graduate.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can take content area Praxis exams as well.
You can. So if I'm already out in the field teaching or I'm double majoring, let's say, I can add on different Praxis content tests to gain additional endorsements beyond my first one.
So becoming an English teacher through the Praxis test.
Yep.
Yeah. That's Gina Benz and Jackie Wilbur. There is more to this conversation. You can find it online at sdpb.org/teachertalk or download the Teacher Talk podcast. Find it on your favorite podcasting platform. And that is our show for today, all about education. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.